Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of Growth Digger, where we talk about growth at every stage of the funnel. And today, I'm very fortunate to have John Dyer as our guest. John is based in Australia, but he's built a global business which focuses on direct response marketing. And I was talking to John earlier, and he's seen it all. I mean, he started the business about 35 years ago when it was all print. And from print, he's seen the advent of internet, from the internet, social commerce, and now they're doing some interesting work in the space of AI and chatbots that are empowering direct response marketing. So welcome, John. Would you like to add a little bit more to your introduction?
Thanks, Taryn. Look, that sums it up pretty much. I started in the 1800s and I'm still here. I've seen it from the horse and cart through to AI robots. But all jokes aside, yeah, my business is called the Institute of Wow, and it's all about us advising businesses how to create a wow factor to take people's eyes off the price and convince them to get off the fence and buy stuff. Yeah, it's all about direct response marketing.
Great. Typically when I do this, my first thing is to ask you for an interesting story, a use case, or where you were able to unlock tremendous amount of growth, either through innovation or use of technology or use of superior customer service. So anything that comes to your mind that would be a good starting point, let's go with that.
Probably something that's happened in recent times, really. I'm a typical entrepreneur. I've been on the roller coaster, not the merry-go-round. It's been highs and lows throughout my career. And I know I've given my wife a few sleepless nights over the years because we've got six children and they're grown up and left home now. But yeah, I was probably a typical entrepreneur. I would say to my wife, oh, look, we're going to do this. And she'd go, oh, no, we're not going to be able to pay for the school fees. That's not going to work. But something that's happened in the last 12 months might be very interesting to your listeners and viewers. And what we found is that if you want to get really quick leads for your products or services, then think about holding a contest on social media, mainly Facebook, but it could be Instagram or any of the other platforms. So what we do now for clients, if they need a lot of leads quickly, and who doesn't, we advise them to run a contest on Facebook, and the prize is whatever their product or service is. So if they're a lawn mowing company, they would give away a prize of a month's worth of lawn mowing. If it happens to be that they're in refrigerators or land suite, they give away a refrigerator or land suite. And basically, the ad appears on Facebook and says, would you like to win, let's say, a refrigerator? And whoever enters that obviously wants a refrigerator. And so what happens is that if 1,000 people enter, they give one away, but they've got 999 people that they can follow up and say, look, you didn't win, but you obviously want a refrigerator. We've got a special deal going this week. And if you get in by Friday, you get the special deal. And the results of this have been quite spectacular. Only 2 weeks ago, a company came on board that sells walking frames for older people. So therefore, they sell medical equipment for seniors and wheelchairs and walking frames. We actually ran on Facebook, would you believe, a contest to win a walking frame with a wheel on the bottom of it. They got 882 leads in the first week at $40 spend a day on Facebook. 882 leads in 1 week, and this company just could not keep up with the leads, so therefore we've got a robot ringing them up now saying that they didn't win, but they've got a special deal on the walking frame. And the reason I bring that one up is that their target audience are in their 70s and 80s, and they got 882 leads in the first week.
That's very sweet. And what are the, you mentioned robots or the chatbots, so are these AI bots that are acting as sales agents?
Yeah, look, and the only reason I call them robots is because the business owners that we're dealing with are small to medium-sized business owners mainly. I've come from the corporate world, you know, worked with McDonald's and KFC and Westfield Shopping Sounds here in Australia, BP, 7-Eleven, all of those businesses. But about a dozen years ago, I said to my wife, look, we're not getting any younger. Why don't we take the IP that I've been giving those businesses and provide them to smaller businesses? So that's what we tend to do now. And they, smaller business owners, don't necessarily know a lot about AI. It's not really something that they have delved into. So therefore, the best way for us to explain to them that an AI agent will do all the calls for them or answer the phone for them is to just call them robots. So that's why I call them an AI robot. But yeah, we're doing a lot. For example, tradesmen, tradies, we call them in Australia, tradesmen. they can't answer the phone of a daytime because they're up on the roof putting a solar panel in, or they might be a builder, they're under the house. So we have a marketing system for them whereby the robot answers the phone for them and basically organises the appointments for them to go out and give quotes on air conditioning or concreting or whatever it might be. And that is a big business for us because tradesmen just can't get to the phone during the daytime.
Absolutely. Especially small businesses that are small teams, they can't have somebody manning the phone 24/7. And I think AI is going to transform the way we do business across the board. I think it's going to have the biggest impact. It's certainly going to have a big impact for large companies, but I think it's also going to have a very large impact on smaller businesses, because now suddenly they will be able to add scale to their sales motion, their customer service motion. A lot of small businesses struggle with providing on-time response to like service requests, sales requests, because they're just too busy doing the work. But now suddenly they can have like bots that are very specialized, are able to respond in a very timely way and at scale and with the absolute correct information.
So the funny part about it, Taryn, is that this particular medical company for seniors that sells basically walking frames and wheelchairs and scooters and all that sort of stuff, because he got smashed with 800 odd leads in the first week, he's only got 5 employees. And he said to me, look, I've rung 50 of them, but I can't get through anymore. So that's why when we introduced the robot, and very few people recognise that it's a robot, it sounds exactly like a human. And the irony is that we can ring 1,000 people an hour. Okay, so therefore, for him to get through 800 and something people, it would take him like 3 months. And the irony is that although he had rung 50 of them and had a close rate of selling, he said, look, you didn't win the prize on the Facebook contest, but we've got a special deal on what they called the wheelie walker, which was the walking frame. He had a 15 or 16% close rate. The robot's beating him with 21% close rates. A robot's beating him on conversion. Robots
beating him on both on speed as well as like close rates. And you've seen it all. Anything interesting from the past? Because what I think is a lot of historical context also fosters creativity. Obviously, being things very differently, more digital, more AI. But I do also believe that the traditional tactics, the emotional factor in any kind of creative marketing is very important. Like you, when you introduce yourself, you are trying to make people say yes to either a purchase or committing. So something from at least like 30 years ago that you did that you still think about and feel that was like a wow moment.
Yeah, if you think about the old school, and we're talking television, radio, letterbox brochures, magazines, newspapers, the bad thing about that was the amount of wastage. So therefore, let's just say you were selling wrinkle cream for argument's sake, and it was expensive wrinkle cream. You would be targeting probably women over 45 or 50 who are worried about getting the odd wrinkle. And if they needed to be rich to afford your wrinkle cream, then you just took a stab and you would put an ad in the women's magazine, or you'd put an ad on TV, or you'd put an ad in the newspaper. And guess what? The wastage factor would be massive because there could only be 20. Yeah,
it might only spray and pray. It's a spray and pray tactic. There's no way.
Yeah, I like that, spray and pray. And so of course, these days with social media, and let's just take Facebook for an example, you can zero in on the rich suburbs where the women can afford to pay $100 for your bottle of cream, whatever it might be. And you can geodemographically target, laser target, like you could never do before. And that's the thing, is that I think the benefit of this is that I live on a test and fix basis. So when we get a new client on board and every one of them wants to build sales fast, nobody wants to do it slow. My name's John Dwyer, but I get JD. So people never come up to me, Taryn, and say, JD, we want to grow sales really slowly. Right? Yeah. they want me to be David Copperfield.
I truly think that the toughest job on the planet is being a performance marketer, where you're spending money on somebody's behalf to run ads and you're supposed to drive results. You can never drive enough ROI. We've been in situations where we are doing 3x of spend, the customer wants 5x. The moment we achieve 5x, they want 10x. It's a never-ending game, basically. So
yes, it's exactly. Success is a drug, isn't it? And if you do get a good result, I'll never forget. You're going to laugh at this one. This is a bricks and mortar furniture business. And they had their furniture store in the middle of an industrial complex. I don't know why, so there's factories everywhere. And the two ladies that owned this business came to one of my seminars. And they said, look, you know, we need more business. You know, what do you think? And I said, who's the decision maker? They said, women. 90% of the decisions are made by the woman when it comes to dining room tables and lounge suites. And I said, yeah, okay, I know that in my own instance. I said, okay, why don't you hold high teas? And they said, what? I said, the high tea, like you would see in the royal family in London. We're talking about scones and cream and the beautiful teacups and, you know, silver platter. They said, are you crazy? And I said, no, I'm telling you, women will sell their firstborn and walk over broken glass to come to a high tea. If you want women, just have a high tea. So anyway, cut a long story short, on a Saturday and Sunday on the weekend, we promoted that if you come to this furniture store, you can enjoy scones and jam and cream and a high tea. They took 1 month's worth of takings in 2 days. So on the weekend, they took an entire month's worth of revenue, and they spoke to me on the Monday, and they was happy as. And guess what they said to me? They said, JD, that was fantastic. What's next? I said, what? Rinse and repeat. That's what's next. Just do it again every weekend.
And swap it with wine and cheese.
And they did all that, but what it demonstrated to me was that sometimes success can breed stupidity as well, because here it is, they've just nailed it. McDonald's, when they came out with a Happy Meal toy 45 years ago, after it worked for the first month, didn't say, okay, what else can we do? They just rinsed and repeat. And yeah, I would just say to everyone, if you do snag something, and in this instance, it was just so easy to run a high tea, just rinse and repeat.
And do more of it.
Yeah.
You know, just keep doing more and more, bring more scale to it. If you're doing like once a week, make it twice a week, then maybe three times a week, and maybe a daily affair.
You got it.
I know you've also written a book or a collection of stories. Would you like to talk a little bit about that and what's in the book?
What I found, Taryn, is that when you hit the seminar circuit, which about 10 or 11 years ago, I decided to swap to smaller and medium-sized businesses, and so therefore you attract a crowd to either a seminar or a webinar, and you know how it works. Then when you are on the talk circuit, you're expected to write a book. So the people who were promoting my seminar said, you've got to write a book. I went, oh, I don't want to write a book. And they said, you've got to write a book. Right, okay. So I thought, if my business is called the Institute of Wow.com, then if I'm going to write a book, I better write something that's a little bit unusual. So we produced a stupid-sized book.
Whoa. And,
it's the size of a tabloid newspaper, and it's 300 pages of swipe files from heaven. I'm showing off when I say that, but it's got the Wow Manifesto, and in this book are 300
pages. That's you on the front, isn't it?
Yeah, that's me a few years ago. Yeah,
in your younger days.
I didn't have so many wrinkles around the eyes. But yeah, so this book has about probably 15, 20 years worth of direct response marketing ideas that worked. And yeah, it's a pretty good swipe file. So I'll actually certainly give your audience the opportunity to get this for free. It has to be the digital version, because the book itself to print costs $400. So I can't hand that out.
No, it seems like a very interesting book.
It is.
And I think you've done a wonderful job of creating the intrigue with the size and the designing of the book as well. Yeah, that would be great. We'll send a link to the downloadable in the comments wherever we post the podcast, so that people can get access to it. Yeah, that was wonderful. Anything else, John? Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, look, I know I've been asked that quite a bit, so therefore I've got an answer for it, of course. My view is that if you are a small to medium-sized business, there's a good chance that you might be what we call a me-too business. In other words, you're like your competitors. If you're in the solar game, you've probably got competitors that have got the same solar business that you've got. Or if you're in the aluminium fence business, I bet you've got competitors that are very similar to your aluminium fences. And if that is the case, and it is definitely the case for 90% of businesses, they've got competition that look and smell the same as them, then I say, look, stop price discounting, because your competitor can beat you within 5 minutes, and start thinking about value add. And value add is what McDonald's have been doing for 45 years with the toy and the Happy Meal. Kellogg's have been doing it for about the same time. Amazon does it with their Prime membership. If you join the Prime membership, you get free shipping and free movies and free music and all that sort of stuff. So The thing is that 97% of businesses worldwide have never, ever used an incentive. Can you believe it? Because it's too easy to drop their prices. When they want to clear the warehouse or they want to get more money in, they just drop their pants. And my view is, look, stop doing that and start using incentive-based marketing. We, for example, have a product which is a hotel accommodation around the world. We're talking India, America, Europe, Australia, you name it. And we can give people vacations that are 3 to 7 nights. These hotels are happy to give up unsold rooms because they're hoping whoever stays there will spend money on food and beverage. So we have a system whereby for businesses wanting to attract more people, they say, buy my product or service, and we'll give you a free vacation. That's the sort of thing that you should be thinking of instead of just easily dropping your prices.
No, I think that's an excellent point. And I think you can, competing on price is never a good thing. When I started Growth Natives about 5 years ago, we were a team of 6 people. We've had tremendous success. We've grown to almost 350 people strong in less than 4 years.
Wow.
And I think the number one thing we did was we never competed on price. We always competed on the value that we bring to the table. And we also consistently went the extra mile for our customers. If they were expecting X, we always delivered X plus Y. And I think that's a very important factor. I never thought of it the way you put it across as like, you know, incentive-based marketing, but it was like a natural instinct that has existed in how we operate at Growth Natives. And I can certainly see how it has helped us being really well differentiated from a lot of the other companies that are out there. They're just like us. They do exactly the same thing that we do.
Yeah.
The difference we bring to the table is our level of commitment to customer success is extremely high. And we're never shy to go the extra mile and do more than what we are actually contracted to do.
And you know what Disney call that? I've been a Disney licensee for a long time, so therefore we take out the licenses from Walt Disney for their movies to produce books and stickers and posters and all sorts of things. And I've been to a lot of Disney courses in Orlando. They have a course called Dreaming and Doing. And you live with an Imagineer for a week, and that Imagineer teaches you how Disney runs their business. So it's really powerful. And what Disney's philosophy is plus one. They say, do exactly what you just said, Taryn, over-deliver and provide everything you possibly can, almost to the point that you're exhausted, and then plus one it. And not many people do it. The fact of the matter is that most businesses, unfortunately, do enough to get stuff done, but they don't plus one it. We call it wow factor. Disney calls it plus one. Our little tagline underneath our logo, I'm not too fussed on logos, but underneath our logo, the little tagline says, learn to deliver the unexpected. Taryn, can I just say to you, though, that if anyone wants the book, all you need to do is go to I know you're going to put this in the notes, but I haven't given it to you yet, so I better give it to you as well. It's a silly URL, but because my name is JD, or I get nicknamed JD, the actual URL is getmorejd.com.
That's a good one, man. That's good creative marketing. Nobody can forget that.
My wife said to me when we came up with it, which was not long ago, we're just looking for like a hyperlink of some sort, so it wasn't too long. And the guy that works with me, who's the techie, said, if you're going to give the book away and some of your time, why don't you just have a URL that says getmorejd.com? And I thought he was joking and taking the mickey out of me, and he was serious. I said, that's not bad, getmorejd.com.
No, that is wonderful. Thank you, JD, for being a wonderful guest on the show and also for sharing your book with the listeners. I hope they learn a lot from the book and also some from our discussion today. You have a great rest of the year and an amazing 2025. And listeners, please stay tuned to other episodes of Growth Digger, where we talk about everything growth, not just at the top of the funnel, but across the customer lifecycle. Thank you.